So hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, author of How to Fight Presidents, and staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, joined Daniel O'Brien, Jesus Christ, 100 plus episodes in, and I blew the part where I say my name. I'm Daniel O'Brien, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie.
Hello everybody, this is Soren Bowie, and I'm doing pretty well too, and I can pronounce my own name.
You know what's the most embarrassing part of this?
What's
is that?
That
the reason that I forgot to say my name is because it's not written down in front of me.
Yeah.
I read this thing that I've been saying for over a year now. and if I accidentally deleted Daniel O'Brien, then it's gone.
Here's how I know I'm terrible at stand-up is that I will write notes to myself and be like, what if I just got on stage and like, here, these are my bullets, and like now I'll riff on them. I've tried it that way. And I don't know how to do it. I just read. Like the minute that my face is locked in on a page, that's how it works. Like I'm not just going to like look at it and then riff on something that easily. Like I need to write it out as I'm going to say it with the breaths in there and everything. And like the mistakes, the intentional mistakes, like those types of things. I need it. I need it or I can't do it.
I realized I was, I completely fucked someone up. Accidentally in a play in college. I was doing this play called The Pillow Man, and in the last act of the play, my character is writing his confession out, and it's this like several page confession that lays out a bunch of brutal murders and also like his last will essentially. And because I as an actor, Soren, you're an actor, so you understand, as an actor I thought it would be more authentic if I was genuinely writing what this confession is. So like I memorized the confession that my character doesn't read. He writes, another character reads it. And I was writing it out. But then as I'm doing it, I'm realizing like, oh, I'm writing slower than this needs to be. I need to get him the pages. So I would like start to write the sentences and then write gibberish and just hand him a mix of the actual lines and gibberish. And it really threw him off.
Of course.
And with good reason too. Because I'm sure he sees it and is like, oh, he's made it easy for me. Oh, no, he fucked me.
There's a play called Other Places where it's just one boy. Well, it's three different plays. But the first one is a boy who's away from his parents, living in a weird sort of hostile situation where the man who's in charge is maybe trying to seduce or groom this young boy. But he's writing letters to his mom, and the whole thing is epistolary. And when I did this play, I immediately started writing the actual letters as I was doing it. And the director was like, stop. You're so slow. You're going so slow. And I was like, okay. So then I tried to do what you did, which is just like some gibberish and some real words. And it was the same thing where like, if I just looked at it, it fucked me up. So yeah. It got to the point where all I was doing was just like Ramona Quimby scribbling. Just like, some, it looks like Donald Trump's signature across the page over, or a heartbeat over and over and over and over and over again. And it looks like a crazy person did it.
It's one of those things. I'm very curious if there was someone who was bored at either of our plays who caught on to this and was like, man, that is not what writing looks like. What is he? Just a bunch of loops.
And that makes me want to go through all footage of like every play or every movie where somebody has to be writing in the same way that like they discovered that coffee cups, that when somebody's in a movie, like, the coffee cups never have any weight to them. Like it's always a real problem because they're empty and by coffee cups, I mean like the ones that have an actual lid on them, like you'd get to go at Starbucks, that there's clearly no weight to them. And the more you recognize it, the more you see it in movies and the more wrong it looks all the time. I bet it's the same with writing. I bet you could go through and you could be like, that was way too fast to write a check. There's no way that they wrote everything in that amount of time.
It actually kind of makes sense when I think about Donald Trump's awful signature, because it's one of those things that like, okay, now this is a part where, like, multiple cameras are on me. Everyone is watching me do this. Okay, fuck, I'm panicking. All right, good. I'm just realizing I've never thought until right this moment that a camera is on that I don't know how long a signature is supposed to take. What is a normal amount of time for me to be doing this? Okay, three peaked lines. That's it. That's my name.
That's it. That's it, everyone. That's all you get. I bet. Yeah,
man, he didn't even come close to crossing a T. I don't do it. That's not my style.
And now I'm going to hold it up so you all can see. That's my signature. So you know going forward, this is how long a signature should take.
Thanks to BetterHelp for supporting Quick Question. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/QQ. Start living a better life today. That's betterhelp.com/QQ. Thanks to Raycon for supporting Quick Question. Get crisp, professional beats at half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycon's offering you 15% off your entire order, and here's what you've got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon.com/QQ. I want to get into the show where we ask each other questions, but first I wanted to update our audience because we teased your episode of American Dad, the show you write for, that you're very proud of, featuring Scottie Pippen. And that aired. That aired this week as of this recording. I watched it. I have it on my DVR. I'm very, very proud and excited. It's still really cool for me to see your name on there, and I'm not even you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Congratulations on a great episode.
I was very excited to see it. I had sort of hyped it up on the podcast and then also on Twitter, and then they moved the date. And I was like, oh, but all the work I had done, all the 12 people I was encouraging to watch it. And then they said, well, we're pushing it, but we'll let you know when it's going to air. And then Saturday rolled around and I follow American Dad on Twitter, and I started seeing clips from it and GIFs, and I was like, hey, that's my episode. Oh shit, that's my episode. It's on right now, everyone. It's on. Please go watch it.
But it's great, and I encourage everyone to watch it. I mean, I don't know how you do it now.
So you can watch it on, it'll be on Hulu shortly, and then it'll also be on syndication in Cartoon Network. It'll be on like three times a day for a little while on Cartoon Network, I'm sure.
Well, cool. Let's get into the show. Soren, quick question.
Yeah, go for it.
When was the last time you were successfully, where an advertisement actually worked on you?
Where I was duped by an ad?
I mean, like, duped sounds like you bought a lemon that you didn't want.
Yeah.
Which I don't necessarily want that to be the case. I don't want that to be the case, and I don't want it to be something where, like, you were actively looking for a wagon or a new tent and you saw an ad that persuaded you. I can go first if you need time.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I hate when this happens because I hate advertising so much. I mean, stick around for us talking about the sponsors of this podcast or whatever. And I don't want to give it any credit, but it often works on me. And there was a shoe company, and I wasn't looking for shoes, so I don't need any more shoes. It was a targeted Instagram ad that the whole premise of the shoe was solving a problem that I didn't have until the commercial came on. And it was like, are you frustrated, struggling to put your shoes on? And I was like, frustrated. No, I'm furious. I can't believe someone would do this to me. And the company was like, well, great. Keep listening. We've created a new shoe technology where you never have to like wiggle your foot to get in ever again. There's this special technology that goes in the heel of the shoe. So you just step into it and that's it. And you're done. And you don't even have to tie these things. And they're good supportive sneakers. And I'm like, ah, what's this amazing life-changing technology going to cost me? $100? And the commercial was like, yeah, before shipping.
Oh, okay then.
All right. And so I bought these stupid expensive shoes that you know, I would say every once in a while I'll like jam a finger in the heel of a shoe to squeeze my stupid foot in there. Uh-huh. But I'm not wasting too much time in my life getting shoes on. Yeah. And I certainly didn't need to be sold on this expensive new technology with this like plastic saddle
on the
back of the shoe.
You're not overwhelming that finger either. Like that finger's not abnormally aged because of all the shoe work it's been doing.
No, I'm never like sweating in my apartment like, I'm going to be late for work again because of this. It's truly nothing that's held me back. But the commercial offered a solution, and I was like, I'm sure I'll find a problem later. So I bought the solution, and I wear these shoes every fucking day. And I don't have any buyer's remorse except for feeling like I'm the biggest mark in the world. So much so that like I'm still getting ads for these shoes, and I want to tell the marketing person, like, it worked, you got me. Now just sell me something else, and I'll buy it.
Yeah.
Do something else for me.
That's my biggest...
I can't buy another pair of these shoes.
My biggest complaint with the way that marketing works, and none of my marketing comes from broadcast television, obviously, because I don't even watch it, but like all of it's coming from the internet and streaming. And once you are even interested in a product, you're being bombarded with that product. And so even if you're first interested, you go look for it, you buy it, that doesn't change the bombardment. They're still like, hey, you still want that umbrella for your table, for your picnic table? You want an umbrella? No, I already bought it. Well, we're going to show you six more. We're going to show them for the next 6 months. This is all you're going to see in your Facebook. Like, it's wild that they don't know how to like turn off once you already buy the product. Like your weird ski binding shoes.
Right. And I'm sure it's one company that like manages ads for various products. It's one advertising like large umbrella that covers these things. So like you can still serve me ads and I'll still probably buy it. But just like I got the shoes, Soren bought the umbrella, move on. Trick me with something else now.
You're right. Dupe sounds wrong because I end up really enjoying this once I do it. But I am a real sucker for mobile game ads. They always get me in a way that's like embarrassing, where I don't even like, I can't click on the ad in when it's being shown to me. I have to go into the app store and go find it myself. Like maybe I can trick people into thinking that I discovered this on my own.
Who are you trying to trick?
Anyone who's tracking the ad.
Oh, okay.
Click throughs on the ad. That's what I'm just trying to cover my tracks.
Yeah.
And they work all the time. I mean, anytime I'm playing a game and it serves me up an ad, I'm always like, yeah, that game looks like it fucking rules. And and then I will go find it and I will go play it for a while. Now, a lot of times what they do is they're just like, the ad has nothing to do with the game whatsoever. They will show you a game in the ad that is not related in any conceivable way. It's like some sort of like puzzle situation where you're like, okay, to get the coins that are up here in the top of this vault, you got to pull these pins, but don't pull them in the right or wrong order or all the gold falls in the lava. And then you go and like get the game and it's Homescapes. You're like, you're basically doing Bubble Blast. And then at the end they're like, all right, you earned a living room, and then you get to go pick out a living room. And it's not the same game at all.
Go ahead. There's not like a bonus level where you get to do the advertised game?
No. In fact, I don't know how this is even allowed, but there's a lot of games out there where they're just like, they can put on there whatever the fuck they want. And it doesn't even, there's no consequence to it. They're just like, hey, come play this game, come play this game. And the worst that's going to happen is you're going to download it, realize that it's wrong, and leave. The best case scenario is that you're going to download it, like I do. You're going to start playing it, and then you're going to be like, fuck, I'm good at this. And then you're going to just keep going because you feel like you've got something suddenly that you're good at in your life. But the games in general, like I love mobile games. I play them so much, like an embarrassing amount. And if I find the right one, I'm just on it for a very, very, very long time. I started playing, Daniel, Magic. Are you familiar with Magic the Gathering?
Magic the Gathering? Sure.
I played once with Michael Swaim and Brendan Carter, who are good friends of ours. And I didn't understand it. And I thought, as we were playing, like the way that Michael was treating it and the way that he was like constantly, I'd put out a creature that I was like, finally, I got enough mana or whatever for this creature, and it's going to fuck him up. And he'd just like have like this one card that could chain up my creature, and then I couldn't use it. And I was like, the whole point of this game is to just be like annoying in clever ways. And I don't like that. And I got frustrated and left. And then I was like, well, I should learn how to play this game. Maybe I'll enjoy it. And so I started playing online. And it's like going bowling where you don't have to keep score yourself. Like I was having a very hard time keeping track of what all my characters did, what all my monsters and creatures did, and how many points they could take off or add to my own life. And so this game keeps track of all of that. And so I was like, oh, great. And so I started playing it, and I very clearly like rose just through the ranks enough, which was maybe like I won like four games, where suddenly I was out of my depth completely. And it was the same annoying shit again, where it was just everybody who I was playing against was like, oh, you think that's a good card? Well, have you seen this one? And it's like some bullshit that I can't possibly counter and that destroys everything I'm trying to build. And it's really just like every little aspect of it is just like, the idea is to annoy the person across from you and just like whatever they think they're building, oh, you just tear it down. And then, and I don't, that part really pisses me off.
What interferes with your happiness or prevents you from achieving your goals? It could be any number of things. We went through a pandemic together and we're still going through it. And you don't even need a reason. Just something that could be interfering with your happiness right now. Whatever it is for you, it's valid. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can connect in a safe and private online environment, so it's convenient. And you can start communicating in under 48 hours, all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. BetterHelp is great. They are committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide, not just in certain areas. BetterHelp offers a wide range of expertise, which may not be locally available in many areas. Some other things you should know about BetterHelp service. Anything you share is confidential, and BetterHelp is not a crisis line. Self-help is professional counseling. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions and send a message to your counselor anytime. Start living a happier life today. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/QQ. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's betterhelp.com/QQ for 10% off your first month. Thanks, BetterHelp. Magic seems like uniquely unsuited for a very experienced person in their 20s teaching another very a completely inexperienced person in their 20s how to play. Like, my brother and I learned as kids together growing up, so we're like matching each other's levels as we're going, and we hadn't seen the game 1,000 times before. So in like mid-20s, Michael is teaching you the game. I'm sure he's a very good and very patient teacher. He still also like knows everything you're going to do.
Yeah. I play a card and I'm like, okay, so this one, he's like, you don't have to tell me. I know what the card is. Okay. Okay. So you've seen these then.
Yeah. Right. And I have one card that not only renders your creature useless, it actually, like, you chose Swamp Deck as your deck. This makes Swamp invalid. You can't use Swamp anymore.
Well, what the fuck? I can't switch now? And then
Now you just watch me accumulate spores on my cards.
It's clear. They're so fucking clever in a way that is not engaging or fun for me. I play against people on this app where they're like, their whole deck is built to make me burn through my deck as fast as possible. And if you get through the entire, like, it makes you like scry a bunch of cards. That means you're like looking at them and you're burying some in your graveyard. These are complicated terms, Dan. It's just a glossary you learn when you play the game. And then, like, he doesn't have any real creatures or anything. Like, all the things he's playing are just these magical spells that make me have to, like, burn new cards and go through, like, 7 cards, now 10 cards, until I get to the bottom of my deck. And I guess when you get to the bottom of the deck, you just lose because you can't add anything. So it's, like, it's fundamentally undermining the point of the game to win. And I just hate that. I love playing by the rules. I like it when everybody plays by the rules. If I lose when we're all playing by the rules that I think are the rules, fine. That's fine. But
that's why it's always very tough for me as someone who likes playing chess. I only want to play with another idiot. I don't want to play with anyone who has studied the moves or like knows any of the combinations. I just want someone who is at my exact level, which, to be clear, means I know what each of the pieces do. And that's fucking it. I can't like pull out patterns or anything like that. There's no Queen's Gambit shit happening. It's just like, I know how all of these guys move, and I'm not interested in learning more. Yeah. I just want someone who's at that level, and we could both like, I don't know, see who's fastest, see who's luckiest. That's how I
want
to play.
Yes. That's all I want. But anyway, those work on me. Those ads work every single time on me. I've played so many shitty games and like played them for a long time to the point where I'm like, I wonder if the people who made this game are keeping track of who's actually playing this and how long they play it for, because boy, am I skewing their stats. And then the other ads that work on me are fast food ads. Anytime they introduce something brand new, I'm like, I'm getting in the car. Wendy's has got some sort of weird new cheese on a jalapeno Munster cheese chicken sandwich. All right, I will be there in 5 minutes. And then at one point, El Pollo Loco introduced a s'mores quesadilla.
Oh, man, that's got my number.
Yeah, that was like a chocolate tortilla had marshmallow in it and some chocolate that like then melted together when they heated it up. And I thought, okay, I'm saving that one. And I told my wife about it and everything. And I was like, we're getting this. She was like, okay, yeah, fine. And then I saved it till for a day where I was like, okay, today is the day that I'm getting it. And I went there and they'd already discontinued it. And I still think about it. It's just like, that's the one that got away from me.
That's a heartbreaker. I will buy anything billed as a s'mores product forever. I was in the grocery store recently and they have those chewy Chips Ahoy. But now they're getting wild with that, where there's like Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, Chips Ahoy, and also S'mores Chips Ahoy. And I looked at that and I thought, I don't know if they can pull that off. And I bought it and I'm eating it. And I'm like, yeah, they can. It's not quite s'mores flavor because it's a very hard thing to nail. I bought maybe 4 packages at this point.
S'mores. I mean, to continue a conversation we've had previously, s'mores are another thing that's like completely impractical to eat. There's no good way to do it, and it pisses me off every time I do it because the idea of it sounds very good, but then in practice, it's like making the perfect s'more is impossible. You're going to have some hard chocolate in there, and then just like the instability of the whole thing is really it's a struggle every single time. But God damn it, if s'mores ice cream doesn't come out and I'm like, yes, something with marshmallow in it. I need marshmallow. Marshmallow in everything.
I might say that so far, s'mores Pop-Tarts is the only thing, is like the best deployment of s'mores as a concept.
That's a great idea. A whole pouch, because then it has nowhere to go. Like it can't spill out.
I'm sorry, you said that's a great idea. Do you not know these exist?
No.
Oh yeah, they do.
Oh. So
you should get them. S'mores Pop-Tarts. They're great. Okay. I don't own a toaster, famously, so I can't have them.
I forgot you don't have a toaster. It's just to keep you away from Pop-Tarts.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, a lot of times branding on or commercials for fast food and then also new drinks, new sodas, new juices. Every time that I travel and I go on a road trip, I get so excited when I get to go to a gas station and go walk in and first of all, look for anything that I saw on the TV. But then also I will look for anything brand new that looks completely fucked up. And I'm like, that's the drink I want. They had Orbitz drink for a while, which was like a drink that had these little gummy balls that floated up and down inside of it.
Okay, it's the gum company?
I don't know if it is, but it's like, that was what it was called. It was called Orbitz juice, maybe?
Okay.
Orbitz juice. It was a non-carbonated juice that had these little, it looked like Goldschlager, basically, but they were little balls in there. And, if you're thinking, oh, that's fine, that's like boba tea. No, sir, it's not. These are tiny, tiny little balls, and the texture's wrong. It's completely different. But I was into that. Anytime there'd be like some peach strawberry lemonade Coke or whatever, I'd be like, yeah, let's do it. Put it in me. So those are the things that work on me.
Jones Soda used to be great. I don't even know if that company exists anymore, but they used to be. I think part of their hook was just having really strange names for their weird sodas that in no way told you what the flavor was. And I would just like walk into an ice cream shop and see, oh, this one's called bugjuice.com. Yep. I'll buy 3 of those and put it in me.
Yeah, Jones had a Thanksgiving soda where I was like, tell me no more. Just put it in me.
No matter how you're feeling about getting back out there, there's no denying it's an adjustment. When the world gets too loud, something I love to do is create my own soundtrack by popping in my Raycon wireless earbuds. We are teaming up with Raycon, and you can get 15% off your Raycon order at buyraycon.com/QQ. Sometimes you need some upbeat music to pump you up before you see people or to stay calm with some guided meditation. I like a good morning mix that I made that I have a playlist that I save, and I listen to it every morning when I'm walking my dog to get me ready and excited about the day. I love it. It's my favorite part. And best of all, I don't have to talk to strangers. And let me tell you right now, Raycon is the best way to listen. They come with a bunch of gel tips for your comfort, and unlike some of the other brands, they don't stick out of your ears. Raycons have a 32-hour battery life, so you can listen to what you want, when you want, for a really long time. They start at half the price of other premium audio brands, but they sound just as good. And Raycons come with a 45-day happiness guarantee, so you really can't lose. Give them a try, and you'll see what I mean. Create your own soundtrack with Raycon. Right now, our listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/QQ. That's buyraycon.com/QQ to save 15% off on Raycons. Buyraycon.com/QQ.
Well, Dan, I got a quick question for you.
Go.
Okay. You know how throughout your life, there'll be songs that you hear at the exact right moment in your life. Maybe you don't even know the lyrics to it or anything like that, but it's just like the feel of the song, and it happens at such a crucial moment in your life that like that song gets stuck in your craw. Like that song now is part of it. You've graduated that into like the upper echelon of your favorite songs, even if it might be mediocre. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like maybe you had your first date or whatever, and or your first slow dance. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. So like you're a slow dance with a girl that you really liked when you were a kid, and now that song, Under the Bridge, is just like that lives with you forever, right?
Yes, I understand this.
Well, there are movies I feel like this happens to as well, where the circumstances under which you saw the movie make the they can elevate the movie into your list of favorites, even if it's a crap movie. And I'm curious to know, what's a movie like that for you, and why is it so special?
Okay, I think I
can go first too.
Please.
Okay. Maybe I've talked about it on this podcast. Have I talked about Captain Ron?
I mean, it's possible.
I might be dating myself with this. Captain Ron, when did that come out? You're about to listen to me do math, so steal yourself. 1992. I was born in 1982. Great, easy. That was 10. Uh-huh. I was 10. I was 10 when Captain Ron came out. I went on my first date to Captain Ron.
At 10?
Yeah. Dan, I was a sexually advanced boy.
Jesus Christ.
I went on my first date to Captain Ron. That's not crazy, is it? People go on dates at 10.
I don't...
It was a group date. It was like... So my friend Cameron went with Lindsay, and I went with Tina. And then they brought a bunch of their friends. We, unbeknownst to us, those girls brought like three friends too.
But had it been formalized that this was a date?
This was a date. This was I asked her on a date.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And leading up to it, I was like, I think I'm supposed to get her something. And so like I went to the Ben Franklin, which is the, it's like the drug/hardware store. And I was like looking around, and they had... found a piece of jewelry that I was like, ah, she will like this. So I bought her a piece of jewelry that had a fake leather. It was a fake leather necklace. And then at the heart of it was two hands holding a jewel. Uh-huh. And I thought, this looks expensive and deserving of Tina. And I bought this thing for her and presented it to her the day, and all of her friends were like, what the fuck is this? But let me back up a little bit, because the night before we went to Captain Ron, Cameron spent the night at my house, and we were in my basement playing Nerf basketball, but talking to them on the phone. And of course, making shots for them. Like, I'm dedicating this dunk to Lindsay Plant, and then doing the cool dunk, and then telling on the other guy on the phone would be like, yeah, he just did it.
Okay.
And that night we were like, hey, Cameron and I decided tomorrow you guys are getting kissed. Not like by us, by us and respectively, like not we're not both going to kiss both of you. But we were like, tomorrow you're getting kissed, and we're going to kiss you. And they were like,
man.
Yep.
Just a whole night of shot calling, huh?
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, we were a lot of bravado in the basement before you're actually looking one of these girls in the face. And they were like, okay. And showed up the next day. They had their friends there with them, and we're watching Captain Ron, and it's all I can think about. I'm sitting next to Tina, and I'm just like, at some point I have to kiss her. And I've to this day no real sense of what Captain Ron is about. I know that that Kurt Russell is a captain that Martin Short doesn't like and then eventually earns his trust, but boy, other than that, the plot just was gone for me, because all I could think about the entire time was, oh God, I got to do it. I got to find a time to do it. I got to do it. I got to do it. And finally, I turned over and I kissed her on the lips, and she immediately got up and left.
Oh no.
And I was like,
But that was the plan.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I did it wrong. I did it. Fuck it. Or this was the wrong time. I was like, yeah. I just don't know how this works yet. And yeah, I was like feeling really low. And then
you were Captain Wrong.
And then they came back. Well, and when I say they, I didn't realize, but Tina had gotten up, and at the end of the row were her friends, and she had gotten them, and they had gone off into the bathroom or wherever they fucked off to go say, hey, he kissed me. Like, they wanted to talk about it immediately and do like their decompress of like what had happened, and or their postmortem.
Right.
And so I was sitting there devastated, thinking, I shouldn't have done it. Like, this was a mistake. Like, we talked about it. We knew how to do it, but I did it wrong somehow. And then they came back and she sat down and we watched the rest of the movie in complete silence. Then we all went our separate ways. It wasn't until school that next like Monday where her friends were like, no, dummy, we went off to talk about it. We went to go talk about it. She told us that you kissed her, and then we all went and giggled about it. They're like, no, you did fine. And I was like, oh, I love Captain Ron. And to this day, like, Captain Ron is a movie that like lives so fondly in my heart. Or like, when people are like, what are your favorite movies? I'm like, well, obviously The Saint, objectively good. And then also Captain Ron's up there. Everybody could give Captain Ron a chance. And like, well, what's Captain Ron about? And I'm like, you know, a boat.
Yeah. Kurt Russell with an eye patch, I think.
Yes, he has an eye patch. Just watch it. It's hard to explain. It's a very complicated film. But that's the one for me.
I have many thoughts. Chief among them.
Yeah.
The communication at your school at that age is so incredibly healthy.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. We are going to kiss you respectfully tomorrow with approval.
Yeah.
And then the idea of the girl's friends saying you did fine.
Yeah.
Off the charts healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Kristen Stewart was like, yeah, you did fine. Yeah. Fine. Wow.
I grew up in a world where you wouldn't talk to the girl's friends about how you did. And if you did ask, it was like, hey, I kissed Jessica at the playground. And I just wanted to like talk about how that went. The response would be, you don't know? And then they would run, and then I would run.
Yeah. No.
Kudos to Carbondale, Colorado for establishing healthy lines of communication super early.
Sort of healthy. I mean, dating up until about high school, everything was, you were actually dating the intermediary, basically. You didn't talk to the person you were dating. You had somebody who floated in between the two of you who was like your communique, and that was the person you were essentially dating because that was the person you talked to.
Right.
And then occasionally the two of you would actually get together and then you would hold hands or you would brush up against each other. The littlest physical interaction was then like that's all that anybody talked about after that.
That's more familiar to me. Just finding like someone just being like, hey, Lindsay Ann has a crush on you. And I'd be like, great. Well, tell her she is my girlfriend now.
Yeah. Kristen Stewart was our intermediary. I think it was Kristen. Yeah. Kristen.
You have to clarify. Not the gal from Twilight.
No, different Kristen Stewart. Good. Yeah. All right. She was our intermediary and she was, she was the one who I was like, was that okay? Where like, I would like check in with her. And it was just this nice buffer from the person you actually liked to have somebody who was like very candid with you in a way where I'm like, how do you replicate that later in life when you start dating? Like, how do you have somebody who's like the officiant or somebody who's the ref who knows, who watches everything, is witness to it all. And then afterwards you can be like, did I do okay? And they're like, yeah, man, that was like a minus B plus. Really great job.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to just like drop the veil of being a confident person and be told, did I do a good job? And then like once she's back, I'll put the veil back up and I'll be like, I know I did a good job.
Yes.
Never doubted for a second.
It was so helpful when you're a kid. I don't know how we all decided on it, but we were just like, this is way better.
Yeah. Man. well, my movie is not that one, or anything close to that level of adorable.
Yeah, go for it. Did you had sex in a theater, didn't you?
So I was watching Lost World and getting blown. So it was the movie Chef. Are you familiar with the movie Chef?
Of course.
Yeah, it's a Jon Favreau movie.
It became a show after that.
Yeah, it's like a reality show now, right?
Yeah, he has on different celebrities that he knows to come in and make something.
The movie was just like movie. And just the circumstances of seeing it, a friend of mine that I grew up, or that I went to college with, she was visiting me in Los Angeles, and we hadn't seen each other in a long time. And we were just having like a perfect, I'm going to show you around LA kind of night. And we had a few drinks, so we're a little bit buzzed. And then we see Chef, and it's not only like a very wholesome and endearing movie, it's also, there are scenes in it where he is walking around the Santa Monica Promenade picking up produce during the farmer's market. And we were like holding each other watching this movie like, that's where we were today. We were on the promenade looking at stuff. This movie's for us. And I just fell in love with this movie just because of like the positive vibes I had with the person that I was seeing it with. I think I've watched it maybe one other time since then. And it's not as good.
No.
And I'm embarrassed of how much I liked it, because another reason I liked it so much was because I figured out what the movie was actually about. And it's like so nakedly, transparently about movie making. I thought I was clever for spotting it at the time.
Oh.
But like Jon Favreau made Iron Man, and it was great. And then he made Iron Man 2, and there's a lot of studio intervention, and that movie's worse. So his follow-up to Iron Man 2, when he's not allowed to make Iron Man movies anymore, is this movie, Chef. It's about a brilliant chef who, when left to his own devices and left to cook whatever he wants, makes great things. But when the restaurant owner tries to tell him what to do, his stuff is worse. So he quits and does his own independent thing, and it's way, way better, and it's beloved. And also, we're going to throw in a few other things. The chef has two romantic partners in the movie. It's Scarlett Johansson and Sofia Vergara. And also, the chef has the respect of his son. And also, the chef is, you know what? Jon Favreau's going to play the chef.
Oh, so you seem very smart to me, because I didn't pick up on that.
Oh, really?
At all. I was not privy to that subtext. I just thought, this is just a movie about making Cubanos.
Yeah.
but that makes so much sense. And it also makes a lot of sense, because I watched this film, and during it thinking, like, I remember like the flavor of it is very much Entourage. Little tiny problems are inserted, and then they're immediately solved. And so it's just like feel good the whole way through. Like the main character is just fucking winning the whole way. The very beginning, like, oh, he loses his chef job, or he quits his chef job because it's not what he wants it to be. He's lost. And he's lost for 7 minutes, and then finds it again. He goes to Cuba, and he's like, maybe I'll make Cuban food. And everyone's like, great idea. And then it's a success.
Yeah. And we support you. Yeah. There's two like nasty characters in it. One of them is his boss, the restaurant owner, Dustin Hoffman. And he gets to yell at his boss for meddling in what was going to be a good product without him. And the other person he yells at is Oliver Platt, who plays a food critic. So for Jon Favreau, the chef yelling at his boss and critics who don't like his stuff, it's like, man, you really didn't listen to anyone when you made this movie, did you? I feel like any scene that has a writer-director playing a character who gets to yell at a critic for not knowing what they're talking about, you shouldn't be allowed to do that in a movie.
Yeah. I had a very similar experience to you, actually, watching Chef. I don't know if you're familiar with it. There's a theater downtown called the Million Dollar Theater in Los Angeles. I don't know. There's not really a subway stop near it, so I don't know how you would have gotten there, because you don't have a license. But it's the beautiful, gorgeous theater. Like, you've been to the theater in Los Feliz that's, like, very cool, and it's got these huge pillars in it. And
Yeah.
It's a very ornate. So the Million Dollar Theater is like that, but even bigger and not as like chintzy. Like, it's genuinely a gorgeous, gorgeous place.
Okay.
And they reopened it to show some movies. And when they reopened it, they premiered with Chef. And we were lined up around the block to go see Chef in the Million Dollar Theater. We went and saw it with a bunch of just like people who were psyched to be there and psyched at the LA history. So they're already LAists. Mm-hmm. And then the movie starts. Every time there's something on screen that people recognize, everyone in the theater goes apeshit. Everybody goes nuts for Venice or like wherever they happen to be. They're going crazy because they recognize it and because this is an LA movie and we're all LAists. And that was very fun. Then at the end, Jon Favreau and Roy Choi, who does it with him?
What do you mean?
So he studied
John Leguizamo?
No. Jon Favreau studied under a chef to make this film. Like, oh. When he's doing the grilled cheese and stuff like that, like he learned basically to be a chef to do this movie. It's who he does the current show with. Jon Favreau, Roy Choi? Phew, good. Phew. Yeah, it's Roy Choi.
Okay.
And Roy Choi is famous for opening like the first Kogi beef, like the fusion trucks that weren't just taco trucks. So they came out and like they talked and everything, and everybody walked away from the movie thinking like, that was a great movie. That was for us. That was for all of us. And like thinking how great it was. And then that they came out and talked and they were very charming and their dynamic's very fun because Roy Choi doesn't respect Jon Favreau at all. And Jon Favreau sort of plays into that a little bit. And then I watched it again thinking like, oh, I have fond memories of this film. Let's watch it. And watch it again. I was like, oh, you know what? This sucks. This is not a great movie.
It's a fairly self-indulgent movie.
The show is very good, I should say, though. You should watch the show. You should give it a shot. Because there's one with Gwyneth Paltrow in it, and he has to remind her that she's been in Spider-Man. She doesn't know.
I remember headlines about that. Yeah. Where she apparently, there must have just been like a marathon session where Gwyneth Paltrow, tremendous actress, and it sounds like a great team player, just on a green screen saying lines for like four different Marvel films.
I guess so.
And like not interested in which ones they are, not going to follow up.
Yeah, but then like adamant, like, no, I wasn't in that movie. And John had to be like, yeah, yes, you were. You were in it. I was there too. We were both there. We were on set.
Yeah. We filmed scenes together. Your name's in the credits. You got paid for it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I think that was it. I really liked Chef.
Yeah, I do like John Leguizamo in it. I think that's a good resurgence for him because I liked him a lot when I was young. Like he in the Romeo and Juliet movie, I'm going to stand by that Romeo and Juliet movie. I think it's a great adaptation, and I think he's great in it.
Yeah, he's one that I'm going to be rooting for my entire life, I think. And for me, it's because staying up late as a kid and looking for things on HBO that might contain some nudity.
Yep.
And just seeing a title that says Freak and it's rated TVMA. I'm like, this sounds like it'll have some nudity. But it's John Leguizamo's one-man Broadway show.
Yeah.
And it's a fucking tour de force performance and like what one-man shows are supposed to be and what several have tried to be since then. And it really had a tremendous impact on me as a kid as being like, this is funny, it's energetic, it's also emotional. It's also like this guy is a once in a generation performer, and just not seeing that respected in like the roles he's gotten in his career.
Yeah, I think that he's genuinely a good actor. He was just in something. He was in Waco.
I haven't seen Waco.
Okay, well, he's great in it. He's good. Don't see The Pest. Not worth your time.
He's someone that like, especially nowadays, anytime he pops up in something, it makes me like and respect the show or movie around it more. Like he showed up in Bloodline season 2 and I was like, yeah, all right.
Oh, this show's got some good bread call. All of a sudden. Move over, Ben Mendelsohn. A real actor is here. Yeah, he's somebody who I've always really liked. And you know who else is in that? It's funny you could actually do this with actors too. Like Lou Diamond Phillips is somebody who's like such a B-teamer for so long and he's been in a lot of movies that are just like, what? Why did they make this? But he was in Young Guns when I was a kid, and he was my favorite character in Young Guns. And Young Guns hit me at exactly the right age because it was so cool. And ever since then, something's got Lou Diamond Phillips in it. I was like, oh, fuck, Lou Diamond Phillips is in this? Well, yeah. Fuck it, yeah.
I feel like we're seeing now play out in real time something I talked about in, gotta be in the first 5 or 10 episodes of this podcast, where I didn't understand the internet's love for Keanu Reeves, and I wish there was more affection for Brendan Fraser. He's popping up in a lot of things now, and everyone's going nuts for it, and I'm so stoked. I think because we all have this same like early love, like the headline going around this week was that he was cast in Scorsese's next movie, and I'm like, yeah, the guy from Airheads, this fucking rules. Finally.
The Mummy, I mean, is an objectively good movie that people then rediscovered years later. But you're right, he's in another movie called Darkly Moon, I think.
Yeah.
Or Darkly Noon. The Passion of Darkly Noon. And it's a crazy but very good movie, and he's awesome in it. It's not funny at all, and he's so good in it. I recommend it.
I'll check it out. That probably wraps up this episode.
Yeah, I think we're done.
Follow Soren on Twitter at Soren_LTD or me at DOB_INC. You can email the show at qq@soren.daniel@gmail.com. I'm actually curious if you think it's weird that Soren was going on dates at 10 years old, because one of us thinks it's normal and one of us doesn't. And I don't, if it turns out that I'm wacko, I'm okay with that. I'm just trying to see what's real here. We got a chat in the middle of this episode from our engineer, Gabe, that just said, it's crazy. I have to assume he's talking about Soren dating at 10 years old, going on like team party dates. Anyway, email qq@soren.daniel@gmail.com if you thought that was weird or not, or tweet at the show, qq_Soren and Dan. Find and hire our producer, engineer, editor, Gabe, at gabeharder.com. It's been a while since I checked on that website. This is always fun. All right, nothing there. he's had so much time to put something there, and he didn't. But according to the auto-generated ad, your website is ready to go. So look forward to that.
So exciting for Gabe to have it ready to go. Yep. I mean, basically at this point, no doors are shut for him.
No.
The longer he just lets this incubate, he can make that website whatever he wants.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, he's had so much time. It's going to be so great once it launches, right?
It's got to be. It's got to be. Yeah, I mean, my expectations are through the roof at this point.
Absolutely. All right, bye.
Bye.